In my message last week, which of course was what we refer to as the eighth day or the last great day of the feast, I made a comment about an incident that we find here in John chapter 8. It's something that was told to me many years ago, and I never gave it much thought. But it was that this incident of the woman taken in the act of adultery that we read of in John chapter 8 occurred on this eighth day. After the message last week, Billy Osborne brought up to me the fact that not all translations have that particular account in it. I did contact Fred Coulter and Dr. Bob Teal as to what their take on it was, and neither of them had any issue with the inclusion as we read of it. We checked many, Les and I this morning checked many translations, and there's four or five at least that contain chapter 8 pretty much as we read it in the King James and New King James versions. But why would it be that not all versions contain that particular passage? So let's look at a little bit of the internal evidence to see where we are and to see if the idea is correct that this incident was relative to Jesus' message on that last day of the feast. Now we can read in chapter 7, I think it's about verse 14. Jesus did not go up to the feast when his brothers did. He held back. But it says in verse 14 of chapter 7, now about the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. So he was publicly teaching. And he probably did so for the next several days. And the remaining verses of that particular chapter continue to relate some of this. But it's verse 37, where he said, we read there that it says, in the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believes on me, as the scriptures have said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. And it's added to that in verse 39, but this spake he of the Spirit, which they that believe on him should receive, for the Holy Spirit was not yet given, because that Jesus was not yet glorified. Now, the question is, what day was this when he made that proclamation? Some take it to mean that he made that proclamation in day 7 of the feast, where there's other people that think that he made it in the 8th day. But let's think about it for a minute. If he were to have made that declaration in the 7th day, what time of day would it have been? Because the 7th day began at sunset the evening before. So if he made it in the 7th day, the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles, as some take it to mean, when would it have been? Now, there is an allusion to the pouring of water ceremony that occurred in that day. Some say every day they did that, but they would have made that outpouring during midday or mid-afternoon of day 7. Now, if he's referring to that ceremony, he would have made that proclamation later in day 7. But was he referring to day 7, or was he referring to day 8? We take it that he was referring to day 8, which makes mention of the outpouring of God's Spirit in the day to come, which would put it into the 8th day, the day after the end of the Feast of Tabernacles. the eighth day being a separate holy day from the 7 days of the feast. So even if this were stated in the seventh day, it would have been late in the day, not referring to the seventh day itself, but in the day to come in just a few hours as sunset approached. So the message of, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believes on me, as the scriptures have said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. So that's referring to the condition that is pictured by the day after the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, let's consider this a little further. The end of chapter 7. Now keep in mind, this has got a timeline contained within it. We know it's the middle of the feast. We know the feast is coming to an end. We know that we're into the last day of the feast, whichever day you want to identify. But in verse 53 of John 7, it says, "And every man went unto his own house." So that continues the timeline of this particular chapter. Now keep in mind, chapters were not in the original text. So when we go into chapter 8, there's really not a break there. It's not a separate day. It's not a separate occasion. It says, Jesus went unto the Mount of Olives. So every man went to his own house, and this is where Jesus went, to the Mount of Olives, for that night. And they came back the next day. It says, verse 2, and early in the morning. So there is a strict timeline being contained in these passages. So this is the next morning after that proclamation, which was very likely on the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles, but referring to the day to come. Now that brings up this possibility, because now we go into a narrative that is tied right to that announcement that everyone had come back for another observance the next morning. Well, what day would that have been? It wouldn't have been any of the 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles. So this has to be that next day, that eighth day. So that's when this incident occurred. Let's start again in verse 2. And early in the morning, he came again unto the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and taught them. Now here's the key passage. And the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery, and when they had set her in the midst, they said unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. I mean, this, no question. Okay, this wasn't a rumor. This was an actual incident that some had witnessed. Now, Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what do you say? Now, this was not only a test of him, but it also contains a subliminal message that we need to understand. And there are many subliminal messages in the Gospels. This is one of them. In other words, we need to read carefully, because there's something here that relate to his proclamation the day before. Verse 6, this said they, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground, as though he didn't hear what they were saying. Picture that. So when they continued asking him, he lifted himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And he resumed writing on the ground. Everyone wonders what that was he was writing. But it was something that pricked the conscience of these religious zealots who were there not for any real reason. They weren't interested in her. They were interested in tripping up Jesus. That's what they were really after. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. Now, with everyone gone, Jesus stood back up and saw nobody there, just the woman. And he said unto her, this is verse 10, "Woman, where are those thine accusers? Has no man condemned you?" She said, "No man, Lord." And Jesus said unto her, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." Now, if this was just relevant to her, that's one thing. But think about it in the context of the meaning of the eighth day of the feast. Because that is a period of time when sinners are going to be raised. They're going to stand to be evaluated, not condemned, but evaluated. Their condition at this point in time is that they will be told the very same thing. At this point in time, I don't condemn you, but he's giving them the mandate right then and there to go and sin no more. Think of this passage in the context of the second resurrection, the resurrection that occurs at the end of the 1,000 years, or I should say after the end of the 1,000 years. This incident alludes to that. And when we understand that, it gives more full meaning to the situation that people will be exposed to when they rise up for judgment, not condemnation, but judgment in the sense of being given the opportunity to turn away from their former lifestyle and go and sin no more. And they would need God's Spirit to be able to do that, which gives relevance to his statement the evening before. Out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. So they're going to be given the opportunity to receive God's Spirit as they had not been in their previous lifetimes. So we need to pick up the sense of this passage, that this is talking about the world condition for those who rise up in the second resurrection. It will be, to all of those people, a situation where they will be told, go and sin no more. And their record will begin to accumulate at that point in time in what they do with that mandate. Neither do I condemn you. Now, we have to wonder why some people leave this particular passage out of their translation. We don't have any originals. Everything we have is a translation of a translation. So we don't know if it was actually in John as we read of it. But it seems that many scholars are confident that this is correct. And I think the context that's within it places it where it is. On the eighth day, the last great day. And the message that it contains is consistent with what we understand about what the post-millennial era will be like. But I think some people, some translators, some religionists, aren't comfortable with that, in the fact that Jesus was not as condemnative of her as they thought he should have been. Same thing of the accusers. That's what they thought. He didn't. Not because her offense was irrelevant. No, it was important. It was certainly a condemned sin should she continue and not ever repent of it. But here she's being given that very opportunity. He's not condemning her at that point in time. But whether she will be at the end is dependent on what she does with the mandate to go and sin no more. So when we realize that there is a subliminal message here that is relevant to the condition that we're going to see after the second resurrection occurs, I think this passage is very revealing. But there's more to it than meets the casual eye, and that's the difference. There's those that were just not satisfied with Jesus' attitude towards this woman at that point in time. And we can sort of understand that, those that are particularly severe in their judgmental proclivities. But let's realize that there is a message here, and I think it's valid that it does apply to that interval of time that we will see happen when the rest of the dead, as Revelation 20 shows, stand for their opportunity for salvation.